Thank you, and good afternoon, everybody. Today I'm going to share with you some activities that we carried out at the Indian Health Service in response to H1N1. I'm specifically going to talk about the use of our electronic health record system to help guide our agency's response to the H1N1 pandemic. Just a little bit of background on the American Indian Alaska Native population. According to census data, there are about 2.4 people who identified themselves as only American Indian Alaska Native, and about 4.3 million people who've identified themselves as American Indian Alaska Native alone or in combination with another race. So that's sort of the range of the population that we're talking about. And contrary to what most people think, the American Indian Alaska Native population is mostly urban, with only 36% living on reservations and the majority of them living in urban settings. In terms of the Indian Health Service, we have what we call an IHS-funded healthcare system. And IHS provides care to eligible American Indians and Alaska Natives in 35 states, and that's about 1.4 million. So you can see that's a subset of the American Indian Alaska Native population. Care is delivered by different types of services. We have Indian Health Service facilities that are funded and managed by Indian Health Service. We also have tribal health facilities that receive funding from IHS, but the facilities are managed and run by the tribes. And we also have 34 urban Indian health facilities. And one of the nice things that we have in the Indian Health Service is a uniform electronic health record system that's called the RPMS. And this is used by most, though not all, of our sites. But one caveat to that is this EHR information is stored at the local level. And just to give you a sense of how Indian Health Service is organized, this is a map that shows the 12 administrative regions for the Indian Health Service. You can see that they combine multiple states. So for example, the Portland IHS area is made up of the states of Washington, Oregon, and Idaho. You can also see the Navajo Nation right there in the middle that spans three different state borders. So this is the 12 administrative regions or IHS areas. I'm going to switch gears a little bit here and talk about H1N1 in the background and the context of Indian health. And very early in the pandemic, we noted severe illness in American Indian Alaska Native people. Specifically in Arizona, we had a cluster of very severe hospitalization and also deaths related to H1N1. We also began to hear from our colleagues in Canada and Australia of severe disease in First Nations people and Aboriginal Australians. And we already knew going into it that we had a high prevalence of the risk factors for severe illness, such as diabetes. We also have a very young population and we have a very fertile population, so pregnant women and young children were issues also of concern. And finally, when you go back to the literature, there's really a long history of a disparate impact of respiratory pathogens in American Indian Alaska Native people. The influenza pneumonia mortality rate has been consistently elevated for American Indian Alaska Native people compared to the rest of the U.S. general population for many years. So in the background of this, we realized that we needed to develop some kind of a surveillance system to help us really monitor this particular pandemic. And while we have all this data stored at the local level, we didn't have an existing system that allowed us to collect all of that information in a real timely manner. So very early in the pandemic, the Division of EPI partnered with our Office of Information Technology to develop a new system called the IHS Influenza Awareness System. And it was based on data that was extracted from each of those local RPMS sites. And the results were uploaded in near real time to the Division of Epidemiology. We did develop surveillance reports that we distributed weekly to our different areas and to our sites, and we also posted those on the IHS website. One thing to stress is this system was voluntary. We developed the software, we released it, but it was really up to each site to decide to implement and utilize the system, so it was a voluntary system. This is just a picture to show you how the data flows. The round barrels on the far right represent the individual facilities or the local databases from which the data was collected. All of that was then sent to a server that received the export files and then to another server where we processed the files at the Division of Epidemiology. And then from that, we developed the reports that we posted on a secure portal for our sites to access. In terms of the data that we collected data on influenza-like illness, and a lot of work went into coming up with a definition for ILI, and I have specifics on that if anybody's interested. But basically, we looked for certain ICD-9 codes and the presence of fever. We also collected risk factor data, specifically diabetes, asthma, pregnancy, and obesity, and we also collected BMI data. And then we looked at seasonal and H1N1 influenza vaccination information. So this included the date of vaccination. It also looked at the type of vaccine, the manufacturer, and the lot number. And then finally, as a real new area for us to go into, is we partnered with the FDA and looked for potential adverse events associated with H1N1 vaccination. And this was really the first time that Indian Health Service data had been used to assist in any time of vaccine safety activity. So I'm going to shift here and show you some of the results from our system. This is basically our ILI data going through week 8 of 2010. And the thing to note from this slide is if you were to superimpose the national level data from ILINet, you would see that we peaked at about the same time as everybody did nationally. We did a lot of validation with our ILI definition, so we weren't surprised to see this, but it was very reassuring for us to see that we peaked at the same time nationally where we were peaking elsewhere. One of the things that we did with these data were to develop area-specific ILI rates, and everything in Indian Health Service is always qualified by the fact that we have a lot of diversity geographically, and of course the disease is going to impact differently in those different regions, and of course H1N1 was absolutely no different, and so every week we would develop one of these maps, and we would show that week's ILI data compared to the previous week to give a sense of if the trend was going up and going down. This week is for week 41, which was the peak of our outbreak. And you can see that almost in every area, rates had gone up compared to the previous week. The one exception was the Albuquerque area, which actually went down that week. And one of the ways that we used these data was to help us allocate our federal healthcare personnel vaccine that we received. We received our first shipment of vaccine for federal healthcare personnel about 2 weeks prior. And based on the data we had, and this map in particular, our first allotment went all to the Albuquerque area to the southwest because they were definitely seeing a peak of ILI at the time we got our first doses of vaccine. And then as we moved forward, we continued to use this information to help us determine how to allocate our federal resources for our healthcare personnel. This graph shows you the cumulative H1N1 doses administered. So this is not distributed. These are actually shots that were put into people's arms. And you can see right around 41 when the vaccine first became available, we had a pretty steady increase of vaccine being administered throughout IHS. We're currently at about 270,000 doses. One of the things that we did from the onset was to really track what proportion of the vaccine being administered was going into one of the initial ACIP priority groups. And really, we had less than 5 years, 5 to 24, and then we did look at 25 to 64-year-olds, specifically those with a high-risk condition of diabetes or asthma. And basically, you can see that this data is as of March 2nd, about 70% of our doses went to one of those initial ACIP groups. This actually was true throughout the outbreak. From the moment we had vaccine, every week when we looked at this, about 70% consistently of our vaccine was going into one of those initial ACIP priority groups. And actually, our coverage is probably a little bit higher with those groups because this does not include household contacts of infants less than 6 months of age. It also does not include healthcare personnel. So we know that at least 70% of our doses went to one of those priority groups and probably even more than that. And then we also did look at pregnant women, and you can see that about 2.4% of our doses overall went to pregnant women. And the pregnant women could also have been counted in one of those other ACIP priority groups. That's why I've separated them out here. And this is hot off the presses data that we hope to do more and more work with, but this is looking at our H1N1 vaccine coverage. So if we looked at all IHS areas combined, we had about 29.6%, or about 30% of our population of all ages received one dose of H1N1. And so based on the MMWR that came out with the median US, about 23%, we feel pretty good about this overall. But I think what's most striking is you can really see great diversity within the different states, with a high in the Tucson and Navajo areas of 48 and 47%. And some of the factors that we think could have contributed to that, Tucson was actually the site where we saw our first cases of H1N1 very early in the epidemic. They are right next to the border with Mexico, and they got hit pretty early on. So there was a lot of concern in the community, and I think that helped with vaccine uptake later on. And the Navajo area, where we also had the clusters of very severe disease. So there was a lot of awareness in the community and concern about H1N1. So we think that might have contributed to vaccine uptake. One of the other issues that we're going to be taking a closer look at is how did state distribution policies affect uptake? Different states definitely took a different approach as to how they distributed the vaccine to our tribal entities. In the state of Arizona, right off the bat, they looked at the data they knew about the severe disease and said, well, even though American Indian Alaska Natives are only 6% of our population, every allotment we get, we're going to take 10% off the top and send that directly to tribes. And so from the very first shipment of vaccine, that's what they did. So our tribal sites in Arizona had a lot of vaccine to work with very early on in the pandemic. And I also have to apologize, we don't have data from Alaska. There was an issue with our system, so I'm not able to provide coverage estimates on that Alaska. And then this next graph here looks at both our H1N1 and our seasonal influenza vaccine coverage in the different age groups. And I, you know, to put it probably too frankly, I think we really kicked butt, especially when we looked at our seasonal flu vaccine coverage. We had over 60% of our children less than 5 received one dose of seasonal. And it's particularly impressive when you look at the range within our different facilities, anywhere from 30% to up to 90% of the children under 5 receiving seasonal flu. I mean, consistently, you can see our H1N1 coverage was lower than our seasonal, but pretty much across the board, pretty high coverage. Just like national data, we had lower coverage in our 19 to 20 and our 25 to 49 year old age groups, but definitely comparable to what was out there for the general U.S. population. One thing we don't currently have, but we are working on, is to get coverage by the specific risk groups. So that 25 to 49 year old with high risk conditions and pregnant women is data that we are working on. So just to summarize some of the ways that we use the data for our vaccine activities, as I mentioned, the data on ILI was used to help target our federal H1N1 vaccine supply for our healthcare personnel. We also used this to monitor from the very beginning of vaccine distribution what proportion of the H1N1 vaccine was going into those initial ACIP priority groups. We were also able to contribute to the federal vaccine adverse event monitoring systems that were in place. So we worked along with DOD and the VA and CDC working with the VAERS data to contribute data from our system to monitor for potential adverse events. And finally, in our end of season analysis, what we hope to be able to do is to look at the different impact that the different vaccine strategies in states had on coverage and uptake of the vaccine. No system is complete without its own set of successes and challenges. This really was the first time that the Office of Information Technology and the Division of Epidemiology worked together to develop this type of a public health surveillance system. And it was pretty impressive how rapidly our OIT people were able to work with us and be very flexible. We had about 3 or 4 different iterations of this patch that went out as the epidemic changed, as our information needs changed, and they were very responsive and able to get this out pretty quickly. But it did require the development of whole new systems and data management infrastructure that we didn't have. We've never received national level data in a real-time basis at the Division of Epidemiology, so that definitely had its own set of challenges. Again, the system is limited by the fact that it was voluntary, but we do estimate that about 60% of our sites participated. Not all of our sites use our PMS. We did have some sites that use different kinds of electronic health records. Some of them did, in fact, contribute to the system, but we certainly did miss out on data from a lot of sites that were not using our PMS. And not all of our sites were within the IHS firewall, which became a real challenge when we were looking at efficient ways to transport that data from the sites into our servers. But notwithstanding, we really felt this was a great collaboration, and we're currently looking at ways to really expand this to look at other reportable conditions. So not just continuing this system through the next influenza year, but also looking at ways we can do this for other reportable conditions like pertussis in the future. And that's all I have.